Hi, my name is Behzad Trinos from Naked and Famous Denim, and you're listening to the Denim Hunters Podcast.
Welcome to the Denim Hunters Podcast. My name is Thomas, and I'm your host. Whether denim is your passion or your profession, or maybe both, this is the podcast for you. Denim Hunters is a blog-turned-consultancy platform. We direct denim business through insights, creativity, and action. If you have a denim business and you'd like to know more about how we can help you grow it, go to denimhunters.com/work. Before we get to the interview, I wanted to let you know how much I appreciate that you're listening. And I have a small favor to ask of you to help me grow this podcast. Would you share it with 5 denim heads you know? Ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts are also more than welcome. And don't forget to subscribe to get notified when new episodes come out. All right, we're almost ready to get to the interview. But first, here's the FAQ of this episode. So, Behzad, what are some of the most frequently asked questions that you get?
I mean, it depends on who the person is who's asking. If you're an absolute noob to raw denim, then you're going to ask me what raw denim is, or like what's the, I would say a very like green question is what's the difference between raw denim and selvage?
And what are your answer?
Well, I try to explain that raw denim is the fabric itself being unwashed, and selvage is how the fabric is woven. So one is a treatment, and the other one is the way that it's made.
Right, right, cool. Anything?
I mean, I could go deeper into that, but I think, you know, if you're asking that question, that's probably all you need to know at that point.
And then you'd also have resources, I guess, I mean, where people can read more, learn more about this.
Right. So, yeah, you can go on our website. There's some information there. I love to encourage people to check out our Instagram live stream because I answer questions every week. I spend an entire hour just fielding questions about the brand, about raw denim, the brand, kind of sneak peeks at new things. So we try to be pretty accessible.
If you have a question that you'd like me to answer or ask my guest in a future episode, you can submit it at denimhunters.com/questions. You can send it in as text, which I'll then read out, or you can record it as audio, which we can then play back on the podcast. Just remember to state your name and your Instagram username. So, a pleasure to have you on, Behzad.
The pleasure is all mine.
No, I mean, I've been looking forward to this one. But let's just dive right into it and get to know you a little. Of course, we've met several times, but I don't think we ever, you know, we're going to spend now 45 minutes to an hour talking. So, I'm looking forward to this, but just let's get to it.
Right.
Tell the listeners who you are and where you live, where you're from, and what you do.
Right. So my name is Behzad Trinos, and I'm from Naked and Famous Denim. I currently live in Yokohama, Japan. I just moved here with my lovely wife, Risa, who I also work with. So together we work for Naked and Famous Denim. Mm-hmm. Originally, I'm from Canada. Born in the early 80s as a first generation Canadian. My parents immigrated to Canada back then. So, you know, I kind of had that experience growing up. Lived in Toronto and around the Toronto area up until 2010. Then I met Brandon and moved to Montreal, and I've been working with him and Naked and Famous Denim ever since.
Nice.
I mean, that's the short version of my story.
But okay, so you've been working there 10 years now. And then you must have been, what, 27, 26, something like that when you started working there. So what did you do before? I mean, college, what did you do before Naked and Famous?
Yeah, so before Naked and Famous, I was working at a luxury department store in Canada called Holt Renfrew, and this was kind of like the Barneys, except they're still open, but like the Barneys of Barneys New York of Canada. So back then, basically, there was only one luxury department store across Canada. Now, Nordstrom and Saks Fifth Avenue have arrived. So there's a little bit of competition there. But when I was working there, there was no competition. And I worked in a variety of different departments, from men's suits to children's wear. I worked in ladies' wear for a long time. I mostly stuck to the contemporary department. So like women's denim department or like the men's denim department. Mm-hmm. That's where I just kind of found my calling, I guess. And through that, I started working for Diesel. So
right.
Diesel was opening some shop in shops in Canada. So this was the kind of the precursor to them opening their own standalone stores in Canada. So before then, they would have these kind of shops built into these department stores. And I was running a women's shop and shop in Toronto. And then I moved over to the flagship location downtown Toronto on Bloor Street. And I worked there with a great set of people. And so, nice. You know, we did everything from buying and merchandising to, of course, the sales. So I did that for about seven or eight years. So I basically went from, before that I was selling electronics. So I was just a salesman by trade. I just enjoyed working the sales floor and talking to people about things that I loved. And you know, early in my day, I mean, you know, electronics was, I think a lot of young boys kind of are geared towards that kind of thing. So yeah. I was working in an electronics store and, then, you know, anyhow, what did I do after that? I went to school for like a semester and then I dropped out. Okay. So school didn't, you know, my problem with school was I didn't really know what I wanted to do. And so I just kind of listened to my school counselor and they're like, oh, go do geography. So I'm like, okay, I'll go do that. And, you know, I actually dropped out of school twice. Once I went for like 3 days and I dropped out. And then I went back because I figured that was what I was supposed to do. And then I was just sitting there like, this isn't for me. I don't know what I'm going to do with this. So I decided to, you know, pull it back a little bit and try to figure things out. I ended up working at Holt Renfrew. I was, interestingly enough, I was applying for jobs at like Sony and Panasonic, mm-hmm. so other electronics companies in Canada to see if they needed any sales reps. And I was on the Holt Renfrew website. I was looking for a suit, and they had a career section, and I'm like, oh, you know, I'll just throw my email out there, or you know, my resume out there. And then like the next day, I got a call, and the next week, I was in training.
Oh,
and nobody from Sony or Panasonic ever called me.
That's kind of fate, I guess. Then, but it was a bit by coincidence, right? Then that you really got into the clothing industry.
Absolutely.
Were you interested? Did you care about clothing before you got into it?
Very surface level. I mean, I knew what brands were, and I knew what, you know, or at least I thought I knew what brands were. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is a cool brand or this is a good brand. That was it. I didn't know anything about fabrics or fits or anything like that. It was like, if I had the brand, that really was all that mattered. So I went into that job and I explained that, you know, my knowledge of, you know, this industry is semi-limited, but I am a good salesperson. At heart, that's what I was good at. And we were, when I was working at the electronics store, we were selling, you know, some very expensive stereo systems. So my understanding of selling kind of luxury or high value items to people, I had that knowledge. Mm-hmm. So I just had to absorb the knowledge of how do I apply that to apparel. And I spent a lot of time studying. I was buying magazines constantly and I had some very good mentors at that store. We had a great training program at the time. I don't know if they still do it, but at the time we had a great training program. And my manager, she was a veteran. I think she was in retail for many decades, and she tried, I think she saw that I was, you know, willing to learn, and she taught me a lot. Mm-hmm. She was very stern. She wouldn't not let me just sit there and do nothing. So right. I remember one of my favorite things that she she did, and I found it to be very useful, was, you know, we had a shirt and tie section, and, you know, sometimes we have to cover each other's sections. And I did work in men's suiting for a brief time, that we would have this table of ties, as, you know, most, you know, luxury department stores have. And, you know, you have all the brands and ties ranging from, you know, $100 up to $300 or $400. So, we had everything, you know, from, you know, store brand stuff to Gucci and, you know, mm-hmm. Ferragamo and that kind of thing. So, and then we had next to the tie table, we had the shirt wall. So we had hundreds of shirts and many patterns. And she was like, okay, for every shirt, find three ties that match every shirt.
Hmm.
And so I would, and it felt kind of like one of those, you know, Mr. Miyagi, you know, Karate Kid kind of moments where, why are you making me do this? but the point was that if I was ever selling a suit to a customer, I would know what shirt would match the suit. And if I, and then I would automatically know what ties would match the shirt. So it wasn't a matter of one of these things where I'm searching for anything. So it would give the customer such confidence in me as a salesperson to know that I know, it wasn't just shirts, you know, it would be like, go find three shirts that would match this suit.
Right.
So automatically, if I have a customer who's, you know, I'm helping them build out something, I can turn to the wall and say, here are three shirts that go with this suit. Immediately, and I don't have to, you know, fiddle about and figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And then they can pick their shirt, and they'll say, "Okay, well, here are some tie options. Oh, you don't like that option? Here's another option. Okay, how about this option?" So, I think things like that prepared me as a salesperson to excel in that world, and I really, really enjoyed retail, and I still enjoy retail today. And you know, some of those fundamentals that they never went away.
Yeah, yeah. So what is it exactly then you do at Naked and Famous today?
Well, we're a pretty small company, and a lot of people think we're this kind of massive, you know, big company with a marketing department and you know this and that. But you know. The thing is, everybody at Naked Famous Denim wears a lot of hats. So, you know, from fabric development and design to social media to building the website to, like, you know, figuring internal kind of structures. You know, how do we ship something to this customer? How do we ship something to that customer? And how do we make all these processes seamless so that, you know, the end consumer doesn't realize that there's a lot of things going on? What do I do? I mean, I do it all. I do podcasts. I do the live streams. I do the product development. I do the sales. I do customer service.
Yeah.
It literally, like, you know, we have customer service emails that come in, and you know, I'm in there, you know, answering them, and people are like, "Wow, you answer the emails?" I'm like, I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think it's not a bad thing that people think you're much bigger company than you are. So I mean,
I'm pretty flattered when people think that we're a huge company.
Yeah,
and they're like, what? Because you know, they see us in stores, and you know, we're sitting next to, you know, some pretty big brands.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, it's like we're in a store, and you know, you might see some Levi's, and you'll see us, and you know, one of these companies owns a stadium in California, and one of them, you know, doesn't.
Yeah. Okay. So I think this is a good point where maybe try and describe Naked and Famous the way you would to someone who's never heard of the brand, and try to make it as short as possible.
Right. So one thing that I like about kind of the current generation of people is that they're very much aware of niche products.
Yeah.
So it's not so strange anymore for someone to talk about raw denim or artisanal denim, you know, if you would, because people are used to, like, you know, craft beer or specialty coffee and things like that. So they know that there's always a world of nerds for anything. So when I try to describe Naked and Famous Denim to somebody who has no idea about fabric or denim or fashion, even in general, I just tell them that we make specialty jeans, artisanal jeans, you know, kind of pulling in from old school production methods. And that seems to, you know, if there's any interest beyond that, then they'll ask me more questions. But sometimes the conversation ends right there.
Yeah, but I mean, because Naked and Famous is not like, I think, any other raw denim brand, because you also, yeah, I don't want to put words into your mouth. You can explain, but why is it that you're different, and how are you different?
Well, we're different in the sense that there's a lot of, you know, with raw, with denim in general, there's a lot of this kind of vintage world that is built into it. So I find that a lot of what is out there in terms of raw denim, the raw denim market is very fixated on, you know, making sure that everything that they do is the same as the way it was. Mm-hmm. Whereas we're not so fixated on that. We're inspired by it, but we're really more fixated on the way we want things to be. So we're not aiming to be the most authentic, you know, reproduction of an old vintage jean. We're trying to make new vintage jeans. Mm-hmm. You know, in 30 or 40 years, maybe someone will look back, you know, a denim historian will look back and say, oh, wow, those were some crazy fabrics that they were making at that time. And we were the ones making those crazy fabrics.
Yeah, because crazy fabrics, that, I guess, is your thing. You do, I don't know, how many fabrics do you do?
A lot. I remember a couple of years ago, I attempted to count how many fabrics we've used, and it's in the hundreds. I mean, we've developed so many different types and kinds of fabrics and new things and spins on classics.
Yeah.
It's hard to keep up. At some point, I do want to, you know, a lot of people ask me, oh, you should have an archive and on your website showing all the stuff that you've ever made. And I'm like, yeah, when we have more staff, maybe one day.
Yeah. Okay. So I think we need to go back a little and talk about how Naked and Famous started, and then we could also talk more about the different kinds of fabric and how you make them and where you make them. But let's just go back a little, because although you've been in the company for 10 years now, you didn't found it. You told me before we got on that you were the first employee, though. Let's go back before you were even there.
Right. So before I was even there, the brand, well, Naked and Famous as a brand started on the market in February 2008. But Brandon's grandfather, so Brandon Svarek is the owner of Naked and Famous Denim. His grandfather started a workwear company in Canada. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Brandon's father followed in his footsteps, and then Brandon entered the business, you know, in the 2000s.
Yeah.
So Brandon's grandfather, he was a Holocaust survivor, and he came to Canada and he started a business. And interestingly enough, I mean, his story is incredible. You know, he started going door to door selling, you know, household goods, things that people needed, you know, gloves and towels and things like that. And he built that up into making workwear and then selling workwear in Canada. You know, one of the best stories about, I've never met Brandon's grandfather, unfortunately. He passed away pretty much as soon as I started at Naked and Famous. I actually went to his funeral.
Oh, okay.
It was literally the week I had started, his grandfather passed away. And and I knew, actually, you know, going to that funeral, even though I didn't know the man, I knew that he had affected me, because I wouldn't be where I was, you know, from going from the denim floor, you know, at a department store to now having the opportunity to make jeans and be part of, you know, something I really love. You know, I have to thank him for that. But, you know, Brandon's grandfather, like us, you know, it was a small company. I mean, it's not, a national company that everybody knows.
Yeah.
So, but one of the very first things he did, he invested in a typewriter very early in the company. And at night, his wife would type out all of the invoices.
Hmm.
So this was fascinating, because at the time, everyone was handwriting invoices. But when they were mailing out typed invoices, they assumed that this was a very successful, big company. Right. So, it's so strange, because it feels the same way, you know, with Naked and Famous, that people look at us and they're like, wow, this is such a big, successful company. And, you know, we appear to be that way, because I think we're very professional. I just like the way that it kind of juxtapositions against the founders of our company.
Yeah, and I actually saw, jumping around or going a little off track, you just hit 100K on Instagram.
That's right.
Yeah, so congrats.
Thanks.
I mean, that is a big company with 100K. I mean, but yeah. Anyway.
It took some time.
Yeah.
And I remember, you know, back in the early days when, you know, 500 followers, 1,000 followers, and mm-hmm. you know, I've been the guy ever since, you know, starting the account. So finally we got it there. I think it's pretty good. I think it's pretty good, but then sometimes I see some random some random celebrity on Instagram and they have, you know, 750,000 followers, and I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah. But then look at engagement. Cool. Look at how many people actually. I mean, it's also, you know, a celebrity. It's something else. We're talking about still. I mean, even though you are different than most denim companies, because I think you're different in the way that you are more commercial in a good sense. I mean, commercial is in my world is not bad. But you fit into you like you said you could be next to brands that sell a lot more than you do, but you could also be next to the niche brands that sell basically nothing because it's so niche. So I think you are.
We walk a fine line. I mean, you know, I think that's sometimes people in the, you know, the true authentic, you know, and I'm using air quotes when I say authentic.
Yeah.
You know, denim guys, they see some of the stuff that we do, and they're like, well, why? Like, why would you do that? That's not real. And you know, I'd look back and I say, well, what do you know? Like, what is real to you? Mm. Because to me, I like, especially with those, and I'm not trying to be overcritical. I, you know, I've got friends and who dress and look that way. So I'm not poking fun at any, like the way people dress, but there are people within that community that are very sometimes, I don't know, maybe they're gatekeeping in a way. And, I always find it amusing because they love vintage and heritage so much, but their idea of heritage and vintage really only goes up until like 1959. Because after that, like once bell bottoms and flared jeans and, you know, disco and all that other part of in the 80s, like all that other part of denim culture that existed, to them, it seems to have never existed at all. It's kind of like, you know, basically go up to James Dean and then that's it.
Yeah.
Nothing else ever happened in denim. And, you know, I find it kind of funny because back then, you know, I love old denim ads and I'll see like, you know, now with Dicron polyester and, you know, there's always this, look at all these variety of colors that we're adding. And I'm like, that was all part of raw denim too. So, you know, don't talk about authenticity, you know. It's fine if you want to live or look from a certain period, but you know, you have to take denim as a whole. You know, it doesn't end somewhere. So I always find, and for us, like we're trying to push it forward. So, I this idea of authenticity doesn't, you know, make sense in my mind.
No. Okay. Yeah. And I think you're right. It's a very interesting conversation. I mean, and to have, and I guess, I mean, I fall into that too sometimes, you know, you want certain things, but if we go back to also how you started, you know, there are certain things that you don't do that have been a big part of denim. So for instance, you never ever washed a pair of jeans, like pre-washing and stonewashing, all of these methods, right? It's always been raw. And then you
we've done a few. We do rinse wash a little bit, and it's not like a distressing rinse wash. It's mostly like some of our women's collection we rinse wash because we do use a lot of stretch options, and when you wash the jean, it activates the stretch. So that way, for some of our items that contain stretch, we do some rinse wash options.
And that's totally fine. And what another thing is that, do you exclusively use salvage denim, or is there also non salvage in there?
Yeah, there's some non salvage in there. We're mostly using salvage denim, but sometimes the thing that you want to make, you can't make it on a vintage loom. So, you know, in those cases, sometimes we're using, you know, projectile looms.
Right. But it started. So when Brandon started it, it was raw and it was salvage. Or what was it like back then? Just to take us back.
I started as a fan of Naked and Famous denim, right from the beginning. I don't remember what blog it was, but I remember there were a couple of early, you know, raw denim blogs back in the day, and then there were some forums, and this brand kind of popped up, and you know, I was a raw denim guy. I loved raw denim. I was on the forums. I was very active, and this brand popped up. It had said this new brand from Vancouver was offering, you know, Japanese salvage denim at, it was like $100.
Yeah.
$100. And I remember, like, this is incredible. I can't believe these prices. So I was working at Holt Renfrew at the time. And one morning, we're having a product knowledge seminar. And Brandon is there.
Hmm. Okay.
And I'm like, oh, I know you. And, you know, I thought I knew a lot about denim. I mean, you know, I would spend most of my time on forums looking at, you know, faded jeans and talking about this stuff. And I was importing magazines from Japan at the time. And I even went on a trip to Japan to buy jeans. So, like, I was, you know, I was deep. And Brandon blew my mind. I was just like, wow, this is a walking encyclopedia. Mm. He knows everything. And you know, from there, we kind of developed this relationship. And Brandon was there because we were going to start carrying the line. We didn't quite carry the line in the store yet. And I was very excited for that. I asked him where could I find the line. And there was actually a store not too far from where I was working. So I went over there on my lunch break and I picked up a pair. And I remember it was the vintage blue selvage. And they were $116 Canadian. Like at the time, if you wanted a Japanese salvage denim product, you were looking at $300 minimum.
Yeah.
That was really, I mean, that time there was no options. That you were paying $300 or more. You know, I remember going to New York to go buy some Japanese jeans, and that was what I was paying. It didn't matter. And for this brand to come out at that price point, it was mind-boggling.
And was it made in Canada from the very beginning?
Made in Canada from the very, very beginning. It was not made in our factory at the very beginning. In fact, when we started Naked and Famous Denim, we did not own our own factories. We do own two factories now. But back then, there was still a decent amount of production going on in Canada. So we could rely on the local factories. Those, you know, unfortunately, those closed. And you know, through them closing, we acquired a lot of machines. We actually took over a company that was basically, they were doing all of their production for us at this point. We were keeping them going and, you know, we decided to invest in them and take them over and they're making for us. Well, it's our company now, but, you know, they're making, we're making, basically we control all of our own production now. Nice. But back then we didn't. And, you know, that was kind of my perspective of my vision of how Naked and Famous was starting. But at the same time, Brandon, and I know this because we go on long, we've been on the road a million times. So, you know, we all internally, we all know the stories. But, you know, Brandon, he started off just like his grandfather, kind of going door to door with a suitcase full of jeans and just knocking on stores and saying, hey, I've got this brand. You want to take a look at it? And our very, very first store that we sold to in the world is a store in Montreal called Three Monkeys. And they still exist today and they still carry our products there. Hmm. They're kind of downtown Montreal. And so that's kind of how we got started. And maybe what set us, kind of what blew us up, luckily, I mean, and we're talking, this was recession time, February 2008. You know, the market wasn't great. And Brandon goes to a trade show in New York and meets with the buyers from Barney's, you know. So they happened to come by and they saw this booth and they thought it was an interesting product. And then you meet Brandon. And for anybody who meets Brandon, he's a very electric guy. You know, he's got a great personality and he's a great salesperson and he's able to capture people's attentions. And, you know, he showcased the product and they thought it was fantastic. And so they said, can we, you know, make an appointment with you? Can you come to our offices and show us the stuff? So, you know, I think a week or two later, he went back down to New York, met with the head buyers, and they decided to put in a test order. And so I don't remember exactly all of the styles that they ordered, but I do remember that they ordered the Black Power Stretch, which is still in our collection to this very day. And so they ordered a couple hundred pairs of jeans, and a couple weeks later they sent us an email and they said, we need some more, we're sold out.
Nice.
And we're like, okay. So we sent them what we had, and then a few weeks later they're like, okay, we need a lot more, we just sold out again. And so it was a problem because we actually didn't have inventory.
You needed the fabric from Japan over, yeah. And you needed to stitch it up, and yeah.
Yeah, so we flew the fabric in, and you know, for anybody who doesn't know, flying fabric in is very expensive.
Yeah.
And we made the production as fast as we could, and we got it back to the stores, and they were selling like crazy. I'm like, okay, well, I think it's time that the test is over, and we can start putting in, you know, some real numbers here. And, mm-hmm. you know, and from the very beginning, our very first season, Naked and Famous Denim, was in Barney's, and we were there for most of the life of our brand. You know, the last couple of years of Barney's operation, we weren't there, but I think they were having troubles anyways. I think being at Barney's at the time, they had a great denim department, and I think a lot of department stores at the time focused on denim. You know, there was a very strong heritage wave. So
yeah.
Being in, you know, I would say the best store in the world, Barney's New York, having our product there at a very aggressive price point in contrast to everything else that was out there. And, you know, if you've ever been to Barney's, you know that, you know, their price points, there's no limit to what you could pay for anything there. So, you know, you would have our jeans and you might have a pair of, you know, fancy European designer jeans for literally 10 times the price. Yeah. And, you know, there we are sitting with, you know, the most famous designers in the world, and our jeans are sitting right there next to them. So I think a lot of people would look to Barney's also as inspiration, and, you know, they say, well, if Barney's has it, this is something. And, you know, we also, on the West Coast, American Rag, that was it, and that still is another store that a lot of people look to, you know, with their World Denim Bar. They have the biggest assortment of jeans you're going to ever find. And, you know, being in there, and we're still there today, you know, a lot of people look to that. So
That's what I meant. You can fit in Barney's, and you can fit in American Rag, and you can fit in small niche stores where all over the world that also sell some of these, I'm doing air quotes now, heritage brand, right? So
right.
That's the interesting thing. There's something I want us to talk about, and you can just say no or stop me whenever, but how do you get that aggressive price point?
Well, we cut out a lot of middlemen. Like, mm-hmm. we cut out a lot of middlemen. You know, one thing is to keep our team small. We're a very small team. We don't have marketing departments and, you know, all this other stuff. We don't have agents or distributors. And when you go to the trade show, you come and see us. Yeah. You know, you've seen us at trade shows. So.
Yeah.
It's not like some other company where you're going to have some down the line sales rep, you know. So that's one way. We also, you know, of course, we don't do any marketing. We don't spend any money on marketing. You know, we do Instagram. Instagram's free. So I don't even do boosted posts. I don't even pay for those. So, you know, that's some of the other ways. And another big factor in keeping our prices down is the fact that we own the building that we operate out of. So we don't even pay rent. You know, Brandon's grandfather bought our office building. So you're, of course, you know, with any business, all of your expenses are built into the cost of the product. So
the fact
that we're not paying rent for our warehouse or, you know, our store Tat Dan Yoko or our office and showroom space, that contributes to our prices being low. Another thing that we do is, and this is actually another big factor, between Japan and Canada, there's currently a free trade agreement. So, So we don't pay any duties or taxes. Taxes maybe, but we don't pay any duties on goods coming into Canada from Japan. So we don't have to build that into the price. But even before Canada and Japan had the free trade agreement, because nobody in Canada was making denim fabric, importing denim fabric didn't disrupt the local market, so there was no duties on that. So from our very beginning, we never had to pay duties. So that's, you know, 12 to 18% of just cost, which will end up being, you know, four, if you know, if you, the
you
retail
multiply,
math.
Yeah, you multiply that.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
That
okay.
that adds up to a lot of money. So we don't pay that out. And, you know, we are now making, and we have for many years, making our jeans ourselves in-house. So mm-hmm. there's no middleman even for production. So we're very good at negotiating even our shipping rates. I mean, you know, with UPS and FedEx and things like that. So we're always trying to find ways to keep our internal costs low so that we don't have to add an extra dollar in terms of cost, because that's going to add up to, you know, a couple of extra bucks at retail. So
yeah, yeah.
The more that we can do to take out like the fluff of the cost of the product, we'll do it. You know, we try to focus as much as we can on the product itself. And so that's how we come up with the price points that we do.
Because are you still around that same price point where you were at the beginning?
Well, funny story about the very beginning was the prices were too low.
Yeah.
And they were at the very beginning when there were like 100, 110, 115, I think our most expensive jean was $190. But even then it was like $120, $140 kind of price point. And we still have products in that price point today. But when Brandon was trying to communicate with the denim mills, he was calling them from home and he was just picking up the phone and, you know, the Japanese denim mill, and say, "Hi, English. Does anybody speak English? Can somebody help me out?" And then they would hang up on him because they're like, "Who's this crazy guy?" And so he would just keep calling back and back and back. And eventually he got on the phone with somebody who spoke English, and it happened to be the son of one of the owners of the mill. Hmm. And he happened to quote Brandon all the wrong prices. But because it was the son of the owner, it means those prices are those prices. They're not going to go back on them. So, you know, for the first season, all of our prices were completely wrong because they had quoted us the wrong prices entirely and they were too low. So
they weren't making money. They were basically selling it too cheap to you.
They were very – I don't know if they made any money on it at all. But you know what? It doesn't matter because we still have relationships with them today.
Yeah.
And, you know, that mistake ended up being a net gain for them for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, and let's talk about fabric then, because – and this is also relevant to the pricing question, because fabric, when you make jeans, especially when you don't wash them, like you – rinsing is not that expensive, right? But it's the fabric that is the – bulk of the cost of making the jeans. I mean, I don't know about, okay, you guys, you make them in Canada, so of course wages there are a lot more expensive than
yeah.
for instance prices in the Far East, but still fabric is expensive, right? If you have a pair of jeans that cost like $150, then you know, going back, you can divide that by maybe 3 or something like that, or 2.5, and then you
sure.
got the what you can sell them for, and then you can take out, you know, the cost of the cutting and sewing and the fabrics and everything else, and then you can, in between that there's your margin, and fabric is a big part of that, right? It's expensive, especially
no
when
no question about it,
yeah,
especially when you're using Japanese fabrics like we are. I mean, it's
yeah.
we're not using fabrics from, you know, Middle East and things like that. We're using very expensive and you know, custom developed fabrics, so there's minimums and all that kind of stuff involved.
Yeah. So I think the question was like, okay, why all these? I mean, that's also yeah. What is the deal with all these different fabrics then? I mean, how did that all start? Because, like I said at the beginning, I think that's the thing that you're really known for—that you do crazy fabrics. I mean,
right.
You've said that when we've met. Brandon said that when I've met him at shows, and you know, so what's the deal with that?
It's fun. I mean, I just think back to my initial reaction of Naked and Famous Denim, and I saw this vintage blue 15-ounce, like it was a pale kind of aqua blue, heavy 15-ounce denim. And I'm like, wow, I've never seen something like that before. That was, and for me, you know, I thought, you know, I'm the raw denim guy, you know, everything has to be dark blue and has to be, you know, rigid and these were rigid, don't get me wrong, but, you know, my perception was kind of, you know, only in one direction, where when I saw that vintage blue, I was like, that I didn't know I wanted that. And it turns out I did want that. And that's kind of what we're still doing is, you know, we're trying to bring out new and interesting and innovative fabrics that people haven't seen before. Because, you know, people ask me, well, what's the market for glow-in-the-dark jeans? I'm like, people don't know that they want glow-in-the-dark jeans until they are presented with glow-in-the-dark jeans. So, mm-hmm. you know, that's kind of our way of thinking. So if it's fun and interesting and, you know, of course we have to create fabrics in a way that they're sometimes they're not sellable. I'll be honest. Sometimes they're too crazy, but sometimes, you know, we have to develop, you know, take an idea that can sometimes be wild and that's, I think our strength is making that wild fabric into something that is palatable for enough people. You know, there's fabrics that we've never released, that are insane.
So there's more crazy fabrics than what you already did.
Oh yeah, there's, you know, of course, with anything, there's the cutting room floor. Yeah. So there's stuff that we might have even just developed, and we're like, we can't sell this, but we're, you know, we've got a roll or two in our factory, just, you know, to have because it's weird, and we're happy with it as the way it looks. It's a strange fabric, but you know, of course, you know, I think that's our specialty is making something very strange sometimes, also very palatable.
I mean, and that is your marketing. I mean, whether it's, I'm sure it's at some level conscious, but that is the thing that, you know, that is your marketing, the whole thing that you make these. I remember, of course, you were one of the first brands to do like super heavyweight jeans, right? And you, remember the what's it called? Raspberry, the scratch and sniff. What were they called?
Raspberry scratch and sniff. We did a mint scratch and sniff. I've got a new, I mean, I could talk to you a little bit about it, but, you know, we've been doing these collaborations with properties that we really enjoy. Like we did a Street Fighter collaboration. We did a Dragon Ball Z collaboration. We just did a Ghostbusters collaboration, Toxic Avenger collaboration. So we're working on these fun new projects because, you know, there's one thing to create interesting fabrics kind of on their own, but now we're creating fabrics based off of characters. So what would the persona of, you know, a particular character be if it was a denim fabric?
Right.
So that's, I'm having a lot of fun with that because I'm a nostalgia nerd. I love, you know, I love horror movies. I love these old properties. And, you know, for me to be able to work with some of these brands, it's kind of like a dream come true for me. You know, we're doing Ghostbusters, fantastic. I'm a big fan of like horror and B movies. So doing Toxic Avenger was great. And right now we're doing a Batman collaboration.
Whoa.
So that hasn't been majorly announced yet. You know, if you watch our Instagram live streams, I talk about it, but I haven't done any major, you know, posts on our Instagram or anything like that about it. And for spring, summer 21, we're doing a collaboration with Rick and Morty. So I don't know if you're a Rick and Morty fan, but I'm a huge Rick and Morty fan. And speaking of scratch and sniff, you know, we're presently working on a pickle-scented scratch and sniff denim in order to make Pickle Rick jeans.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Pickle Rick.
But I mean, so is anyone buying scratch and sniff jeans?
We sold them out.
Wow.
You know, I don't want to sound, I mean, okay, I'll sound a little braggadocious just for a second, but nothing in our history hasn't ever sold out. Every single thing that we've ever made, ever, has sold out.
Didn't you also do like transparent jeans at one point?
That was a April Fool's joke. Yeah.
But I thought I saw them at a trade show, but maybe I saw them online or something.
Oh, you definitely saw them at a trade show.
Okay. Yeah. So I saw them in Berlin at a trade show. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. People wanted them. People were asking, when are those coming out? And I'm like, it was a joke.
I'm sure that that's something that Rudy would actually want, you know, to put over his jeans when he's cycling around Zurich. You know,
right? So, yeah. I don't know if it was Rudy has a friend. I forget his name. Very, very nice guy, German gentleman, and he was asking about them. He's a collector of weird things, denim, and he really wanted a pair.
Nice. Right. So we time is flying here. This has been a lot of fun.
It's a fun conversation.
So we are sort of coming to the end of this interview already. But I do have a few questions left that I just wanted to run by you. So let me look at all my questions here. So we covered that one and this one. Right. So, I mean, let's well, yeah, I think I actually only have the last question left at this point. So, and this is, of course, I asked this to all the guests, and this is, just to be clear, only hypothetical. It's not something I want for any of my guests. But if one day your house should be burning and your family is already safe outside and you're safe outside, what do you rush back in to get?
Nothing. You know, I just moved from Montreal to here in Japan, and we had our apartment, you know, packed up and shipped, and that took, I don't know, almost 2 months to get here. And by the time it got here, you know, it was kind of this burden. Like, you know, we had been living without all of this stuff for so long, and all of a sudden it came, and now it's all this stuff that we got to deal with. So, you know, running into a burning building, I don't think I would risk my life for anything that is. And don't get me wrong, you know, I have a giant movie collection, I have a giant game collection, and I love all of these things, but I don't think I would risk my life for any of it.
It's a great answer, I think. So that was it, actually. And the last thing that we need to make sure that we do is we tell the listeners where they can find out more about you and Naked and Famous.
Right. Well, if you're interested in our products or the brand or anything, you can follow us on Instagram. I think that's where you're going to find the most information. So, you know, Naked and Famous Denim on Instagram. We have a YouTube channel also, but that's mostly replays of our. We do live streams Fridays at 7 p.m. Eastern. So if you want to interact with me personally, you can every week on Friday. So I'm going to be doing another chat in just a few hours. You know, Saturday morning my time.
Yeah, Saturday morning your time. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So we're pretty accessible as a brand. You know, we have a store in Montreal called Tate and Yoko. You can check that out as well. That's on Instagram. Or go to our website, nakedandfamousdenim.com, and sign up for our newsletter. We send out some information through that as well.
Well, Behzad, it's been a pleasure having you on.
Thanks for having me.
You've made it to the end of this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast so you'll never miss a future episode. And if you want to get more content about denim, go to denimhunters.com.